Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast uncovering the dark realities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew, and each week we dive deep into the manipulation, control, and courageous escapes that define these worlds.
And I'm Melody, Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I am here as an advocate for fellow survivors.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. The content discussed on this podcast are based on personal experiences and should not be construed as factual or legal advice. Neither the host nor the guest are liable for any statements made during the episodes. Listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
And before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may cover explicit and potentially disturbing subjects such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, Cultimatum fans, before we dive into today's episode, we need a tiny favor from each of you.
That's right. If you love what you hear, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple and Spotify.
Your support helps us to reach new listeners and bring more awareness and attention to these important topics.
So tap that star rating, drop a quick review, and help us spread the word. It really does make a difference.
Thank you so much for tuning in and for your amazing support. We truly appreciate each and every one of you. Now let's get started with the show.
Here we go. Welcome to the Cultimatum Podcast, a culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew. And with me tonight is my co-host, of course, Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you. And today we have another ex-Jehovah's Witness. Tim is a resilient survivor who was shunned at the age of 10 by Jehovah's Witnesses back in 1983. He was abandoned by his family and left to navigate isolation alone. Tim later discovered that he was on the autistic spectrum and lives with ADHD, CPTSD, oh gosh, all these acronyms, and other challenges. Through writing, art, and a courageous quest for authenticity, he is now reclaiming his story and reaching out for real connections. He is here to share his story with us. Tim, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome, Tim. I'm excited to hear your story. So while we have another Jehovah's Witness, Tim has a completely different angle on his story, and we'd like to hear it. So, Tim, where would you like to start?
Well, I'll start at the beginning. Yeah, I was born into the Jehovah's Witnesses. I say three generations deep, but actually, if I would have been a Jehovah's Witness, I'd have been a fourth generation. Both my grandfather on my dad's side was an elder, and there was uncles that were elders, and my dad was never an elder. That was stuff going on in the house where he just never made that happen. But, I mean, life was pretty much kind of normal, seemed normal for me for the most part, as normal as a Jehovah's Witness can be. You know, we don't do birthdays, holidays, anything like that. So I was kind of the oddball in school, you know, because you couldn't stand up. Everybody saluted the flag back then. Couldn't take no part of that, no part of any of the holiday traditions at school, any extracurricular activities. Couldn't do Boy Scouts, anything like that. Matter of fact, we couldn't associate. I couldn't even have friends that were outside of the religion. But at the age of 10, I got shunned. And what it was called actually was publicly reproved, but they treat you the same way. There's no difference. The only difference is I wasn't baptized. If I was baptized, I would have been disfellowshipped. And it was the same treatment.
The audience probably knows, but we could have some new listeners or people who are just not clear. What's the difference between being shunned and disfellowshipped?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Is that what disfellowshipping is? It's an ostracization of you. You're dead to them, basically, you are back in the, accepted back in the religion with and repented. And that can take years.
Except you said that you weren't baptized. So instead of being shunned, instead of being disfellowshipped, you were shunned.
It was called public reproved, which still required shunning.
Okay.
What happened is I got shunned for a really ridiculous reason. I was 10 years old, and I was with my mom, and we were shopping at a Kmart store. And while we were shopping, I was playing with a little digital watch in my hand. And I mean, to this day, I don't remember if it was intentional or not, but when mom went through the line and paid for her stuff, I walked out of the store with this watch in my hand. And she caught it before we even got to the car and took me back in the store and made me give it back, you know. And I got home, I got a pretty good spanking. Mom wore the pants in the family. She was disciplinarian. Dad was very passive. So I got grounded. And when I say mom was disciplinarian, it was... when I got spanked, it wasn't, you know, with your hand or with a paddle. It was with a metal coat hanger. It was with a vacuum cord. It was with whatever she could get her hands on. And it lasted a good while. Then, you know, you would think that would be the end of it. But mom took it upon herself to tell the elders in the congregation that we were part of. And back in the 80s, it was a lot stricter than the organization that I see today. And what happened was, is the same thing that happens when you get disfellowshipped or you commit some kind of sin, or even, I mean, it can be as simple as just questioning the beliefs. They have two elders take you in a room by yourself, and they talk to you about the situation. And then they decide from there what they're going to do. And they decided they were going to publicly reprove me. Now, prior to this, all my friends, best friends, were Jehovah's Witnesses in the congregation. There were quite a few kids there. I had sleepovers, you know, with them and hung out with them on a daily. A lot of them live close by. But what they do when they public reprove you or disfellowship you, the process is the same. They make a public announcement and announce to the whole congregation while you're sitting there that you are shunned. And they go into the detail of it. And, that's, you know, I remembered as one thing that I just can't shake from my brain to this day is that moment where everybody turned their eyes and looked at me. You know, we had a congregation of, I don't know, I'd say a couple hundred people. And then after everybody turned their eyes and looked at me, and after it was all said and done, nobody looked at me again. My best friends wouldn't even make eye contact with me. It was
a question. I've sure. never heard of a child being shunned or disfellowshipped or excommunicated before. Is that unusual as far as you know, or was that somewhat of a fairly common practice?
It was more common than I even knew. I didn't realize how common it was until I was interviewed on a YouTube channel. The comments, hundreds of comments came from that video and people coming forward. And actually, I've got I was actually looking at it today. I've downloaded a PDF that's a master thesis that somebody wrote on the shunning process, that they did a study on it. And a lot of the people in that study were as young as 8.
I just don't understand that. Children make mistakes. That's a new one to me. This is new news to me, but wow, I'm just thinking that's how children learn and grow, is by making mistakes, and they're getting basically shunned for making a normal childhood mistake. That's insane.
And I had to endure, you know, from the time I was 10 until the time I was 16. When I left home, I had to go to church every time. We didn't call it church. It was called the Kingdom Hall, you know, but I had to go. They call them meetings. I had to go to every meeting. We went to hour-long meeting on Tuesday, 2 hours on Thursday, and 2 hours on Sunday. And then we had to go out door-to-door. They call that field service. And that was, I couldn't stand that. That was terrible. It made school terrible, because you'd end up knocking on doors of friends in school. I was, you know, being diagnosed as an adult with autism, I understand where I was bullied a lot in school. And, you know, I always thought it was just because I was a Jehovah's Witness and different, but I was a Jehovah's Witness and different plus autistic. So all through my school years, I was bullied. I ended up dropping out of school in 10th grade and went to an alternative school to get my diploma, which I did. Jehovah's Witnesses discourage higher education, so I had no plans of college. Didn't even know anything about that. I didn't know anything about the world outside of the religion, to be honest. I had a few friends that basically from 16 until about 16 to about 25, 26 years old, I couch surfed and found myself in some very dark situations. Found myself into drugs, alcohol. I mean, I've been in just about every situation that you could. I was in a situation where I was in an apartment where a drive-by shooting happened and somebody got killed right in front of me. It was like I was drawn to the worst kind of people that you could possibly be around. But I had such a low self-esteem, you know, and still to this day, you know, this fear of rejection stays with me. I've lived my whole entire life, you know, I'm 51 now, I'll be 52 this year, and I've not had a relationship with my family my entire life. I've never known what unconditional love is. I've never known what support from a family is. I've never been encouraged to do anything. Yet my entire life, I still tried to seek approval from my parents until they died. But brain's sliding over here.
I have a quick question. You were saying that you were doing the door-to-door ministry. Were you doing that when you were in the process of being shunned or punished?
Yes. Yeah, you had to. Because you had to. That was part of kind of repenting. You still had to go through the motions.
So you were out proselytizing, trying to save other people, and yet the people in your own congregation weren't even allowed to talk to you.
Correct.
Because you weren't considered worthy to even have a conversation with, but yet you were that's just okay. I just thought, well, maybe he was doing that before he got the shunning.
No, it was you know, I was the indoctrination is hard there. I mean, extreme. You know, I was on stage giving talks to the congregation, 8 years old, you know. Was out going door to door before that. You know, they made you keep track of your time. They made you keep track of how long. They called it field service. You had to have so many hours a week or a month to be considered what was called a publisher. Then there was a pioneer, then there was an auxiliary pioneer, and pioneers, I think back then, had to do 90 hours a month in the field. I don't think they do the door-to-door service so much anymore. It's mainly those carts on the side of the road is what I see. But yeah, it was very uncomfortable 6 years. I mean, I actually did. I don't know if you had a chance to read it, the poem I wrote about it called Shunned. But I don't know, maybe if we get a chance, I can recite it while we're on here. It kind of goes pretty deep and it's heavy and raw.
We can certainly post that on the Cultimatum podcast group for anybody who wants to read it.
Yeah, it's on my blog.
Okay.
I got a whole section designated to my poetry, and actually I got a player where I read it, so you can hear me read it.
Okay. Okay. We'll definitely have links to that in your show notes as well.
Okay. Cool.
So, Tim, after you were, excuse me, because I'm always get the terms confused, shunned, I guess it was at 10 years old, that's when you left JW, correct?
Well, no, I didn't leave. I mean, I haven't been a Jehovah's Witness since I was 10 years old, but I had to continue going to the Kingdom Hall with my parents as long as I lived under their roof, which was 6 more years. So
Melody, would that be physically and mentally out?
I mean, I guess it depends on where he was mentally. Did you still believe in the Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, during that time?
I never was I always found it just boring. I never paid attention. And it might have had to been part of with my ADHD and autism. But no, I was not ever what you would call a believer. I had fears when I left because they believe that they're a doomsday cult. You know, they believe in Armageddon and there's this, it's going to happen and it's always around the corner. They've actually predicted several dates. They stopped doing that now because they were wrong every time.
I have a question on that. And sure. It's not specific to your experience or your cult, but it seems like all of the doomsday cults, and there are hundreds of them, I would imagine, every single one of them has gotten it wrong. Like, so even just a couple of years ago, there was the ending of the world. Somebody prophesized. It just never happens. So Melody, I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be, but if I'm in a cult or a religious organization, because I know when you're in the cult, you don't consider it a cult. When the prophet or the apostle or the elder or the leader or whatever.
It's governing says, body okay, in our case.
Says another, okay, I got a date, January 1st, 2027. At some point, wouldn't somebody say, none of these have come true?
Ever.
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 The world is still going. Yeah, we've had wars and we've had apocalypses and we've had horrific things happen, but the world is still here.
Well, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses, the last specific date that they said that a year that it was going to happen was 1975. I was born in 1973, and from what I hear, and I have early memories from even that age of my parents talking about me never having to go to school because Armageddon would happen before I was old enough for school.
And yet here you are.
Yeah, here I am, and they're dead.
Yeah, oh, nothing to laugh about, but yeah.
It's honestly, their deaths is what ended up putting me over the edge and causing me to have a mental breakdown a couple of years ago. They died 3 years apart, and both of them died very unexpectedly from cancer. Dad was a survivor of cancer, and then it came back, and within his diagnosis of stage four, he was gone in just a few weeks. And Mom had breast cancer and was a survivor of breast cancer. But then she was in remission for years and then all of a sudden got diagnosed with stage four leukemia and died within 2 weeks of the diagnosis.
Wow.
And now, that was 3 years apart.
Were they both active Jehovah's Witnesses at the time of their death? So they stayed in and they believed until the end of their lives.
They, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses, the organization is led by what's called the governing body. And it's just a group of, it varies in number, but I think it's 9 to 11 men. And they claim to have direct contact with Jehovah God. And that all the revelations come through them. And when they're wrong about something, they say they have this thing called new light. And it's because we had to get new light. We didn't understand it. And new light has been shed on it. But they like to keep the organization members dumbed down. They don't encourage education. They don't encourage, there's competition, sports, anything like that. You're not allowed to associate with what they call them, the worldly people. People of the world, the whole world. So Armageddon, when Armageddon comes, everybody's going to die except Jehovah's Witnesses. That's what they believe. And they're the only one, they call it the truth.
Yeah, and I was in the house of Yahweh, very similar teachings to Jehovah's Witnesses. Just we use the word Yahweh for God instead of Jehovah. But very similar doomsday teachings. And yeah, there are a lot of parallels with Jehovah's Witnesses, including the not celebrating any of the holidays. But for me to address Andrew's question, I think the big thing is, Andrew, is these cults, I'm sure Jehovah's Witnesses being included, when they predict the doomsday and it doesn't happen, usually they have all these excuses. And when you're in that cult mindset, they gaslight you and you accept the gaslighting and you're just like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Well, you know, in the religion, there is nothing that comes before Jehovah in the religion. Nothing. Your career, your children, your family. Jehovah comes first in all things. And with that being said, they're always, the end is always near. So, for example, my mom and dad lived in a trailer their entire lives. Never bought a house because the end was right around the corner. You know, he was a truck driver for most of his life. Mom was she worked for the police department. She was a school traffic guard, but I mean, just not a ton of money. They don't want you to be rich and definitely not be a critical thinker. They just it's kind of crazy, you know, if you ever watch any of their stuff, like on their channels, the JW.org or anything, you know, that when they're quoting scripture and talking about, you know, the truth, they always use their publications to teach from. There's no other reference points, you know, used. It's crazy.
Yep, exactly. And that is a cult mindset. They don't want you to look for outside resources. They want you to stay in that echo chamber, so to speak.
Yeah, and this, you know, you were talking about the PIMO stuff. Those terms weren't around when I was young. You know, that was all new to me when I started learning about the ex-Jehovah's Witness community. I forgot where I was going with that. My brain skips beats. But, you know, through that 6 years that I was there from 10 to 16 when I lived at home, Mom locked me out of the house multiple times. She put me in two mental health behavioral hospitals when I was young. Once when I was 12, once when I was 13. So that was another means to get bullied by neighborhood kids and stuff like that. I've always had this feeling my entire life that, you know, just people don't like me and I don't allow people to get close to me. I have problems maintaining relationships, you know, even to this day, I have zero long-term relationships in my life. I have zero friends from childhood. Honestly, I only have two people that I call friends.
Tim, could that be part of, I have some autism background in my family. So that's typical of an autistic person, not having personal relationships. Would you attribute it to that?
I think it's a double whammy for me. You know, not ever learning what unconditional love is and having that family dynamic of support and encouragement, you know, to push me to do the right things, to teach me, you know, what the world's about. I just had to fly by the seat of my pants. And fortunately, I'm a highly functioning autistic person and I'm pretty intelligent. And I've managed to accomplish quite a bit of things when I was younger. It's as I've gotten older. Well, it's honestly just after Mom and Dad died where I really shut down to everybody. But I have learned that, you know, in hindsight, after being diagnosed as autistic, that most of my life I've wore a mask wherever I go. And I used to, before I knew I was autistic, I used to call myself a chameleon because I could blend myself in just about anywhere when I was younger. And I was a very good salesman. I was good at sales. All that door-to-door service taught me how to sell things. And I had to learn how to manipulate, you know, just to survive, you know, from 16 into my mid-20s. I really didn't get my head together or anything until I actually left. I moved away from Kentucky in 2001, and I was 27, and I moved to Carolina Beach, North Carolina. And that's when I started getting my life together and realizing that I wasn't as this terrible person that I thought I was. I wasn't this loser. I wasn't this outcast. I wasn't this person that was going to amount to nothing.
So now, did you have contact with your parents after you left at 16 at all? Was there no contact at all after that point?
And through my entire life, we averaged probably talking to each other maybe once or twice a year. I mean, that's about it. You know, it was funny when I moved to the beach and I was, Carolina Beach is actually on an island and it's a barrier island. I moved there in 2001. I lived there a little over 20 years. And when they found out I lived at the beach, they started calling me. And that's when they started calling me a couple times a year and they wanted a place to come vacation. And of course, I was always seeking their approval regardless. So I let them come and they would come once a year. They wouldn't stay with me, but yeah, they wouldn't stay with me. But, you know, we'd go out to dinner once or twice while they were there, but mostly they do their own thing. I don't know why that mattered that I was there. I guess, I don't know.
Yeah, that is unusual because you would think that if the reason that they were wanting a place to vacation would be because they would have a free place to stay.
Yeah. And never once did they stay with me.
Okay, so do you want to pick up where you left off? Between 10 and 16, you continued to go to the Kingdom Hall, Ted.
Yeah. And in that time, you know, Mom kicked me out of the house multiple times. She would lock me out many times. There was one particular occasion that I'd probably been about 14. It was pouring down rain that night, and I ended up sleeping under a porch of a worldly friend's house. It was actually a girl. I knocked on her window to see if she would talk to her mom to see if I could come in, but she wouldn't do that. So I ended up sleeping under her porch that night, but that happened often that I would get locked out. And I was taken in for a little while by an older man who was a school teacher. And as a result, he ended up molesting me more than once. And this is when I was about 12 years old, I would guess. And I never told anybody about that until I was in my 30s. I kept it to myself. I was afraid to tell my parents. I was afraid to mention anything about that.
As do most sexual abuse victims, they keep it to themselves. Not all of them, but a majority of them.
Well, the Jehovah's Witnesses cover up child sexual abuse anyway. I mean, they have this two-witness rule. And if there's not two witnesses to the crime, then it didn't happen. And usually if there's CSA, there's only two people there and one of them's not going to be a witness.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And they have an internal judicial committee. They don't go to the authorities. They've been sued for this, and it's kind of common knowledge.
Yes. Yes. They are known for that. That is fact. We've had other guests come on that were ex-Jehovah's Witnesses that suffered abuse as well and have had to go through the same process and basically being put on the spot and saying, well, where are your witnesses? Well, what abusers abuse in front of people? That's not the way that works.
So how long were you with this? I almost called him a gentleman. How long were you with this predator? For you said you moved in at 12.
Multiple times I would go there because it was a place to lay my head. I mean, even after it happened, I kept going there. I didn't, you know, that's another thing. They, you know, my parents, they don't teach you about sex. They don't teach you about anything.
No.
There's nothing. You know, that was my first kind of experience sexually I ever had in my life. It was like a 70-year-old man, you know?
Horrible.
Yeah, it is what it is, you know, and he never got prosecuted. He's long dead, I'm sure.
And hopefully burning in hell.
Yeah, and, you know, I even remember him telling me, you know, when he first started making his moves, telling me that, you know, about the other neighborhood kids that done things with him. And so I was not his only victim.
Wow. And as far as you know, nobody ever came forward to accuse him?
As far as I know, no. I mean, when I left in 2001, he lived right next door to my aunt, like literally right next door. My aunt is the one introduced me to him.
So just because I'm not familiar with a lot of this, you said there was a two witness rule. So if two of the victims came forward, the rule has to be that they have to be there. Or if two victims came forward and say, we were both molested by this man, that's two victims and two witnesses.
Well, see, here's the problem with my situation. That man wasn't a Jehovah's Witness.
Oh.
So that.
All right, but
if. Now you're right. This person was a Jehovah's Witness and there were multiple children that he abused, if multiple children come forward, then it would be addressed. But if that didn't happen, then no, you would have to have two witnesses. And you would have to have, if I remember correctly, you had to have two witnesses to the actual occasion.
Right, right.
And there's
of course, it didn't dawn on you to go to the police because that's what you probably thought was normal, or you didn't know any. Like you said, that was your first exposure to sexuality.
Yeah, he started showing me porn. That was the first. That's how it started, and you know, just kind of went from there. I mean, I never did anything to him. He always did things to me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So then you leave at 16, and where did you go when you were 16?
So I just, you know, I had this chameleon-type personality. I didn't know anything about the world at all. I ended up couch surfing a lot. I mean, I was place to place, but I would always be drawn to the worst of the worst kind of people because I felt like I was the worst of the worst kind of people. I was going to be, at that point in time, I believed a little bit about the Jehovah's Witnesses believed, you know, I was scared of being killed at Armageddon. But I kind of manipulated my way through life until I realized that I could sell things. And then once I learned that, and that wasn't until, well, my first sales job, I was 18, but I didn't get I never had an apartment that was my own until I was like 24-ish. I was a telemarketer at that time. But, you know, I got myself into a lot of trouble. I mean, I'd been arrested multiple times as a child or as a young adult. Let's just put it that way as a teenager. Nothing ever serious. I mean, just always a misdemeanor, something stupid. I'd catch shoplifting or something like that. Or yeah, I used to scam fast food restaurants for food and I'd get caught for doing that every now and then. Eventually, what happened was, I ended up, what kind of got me pushed towards a good direction is I got heavy on doing some bad drugs. I was never into opiates. It was cocaine related. But in that process, I ended up going into my grandfather's house and stealing his credit card. and went out and I spent about $3,000 in just a few days and was trading it for drugs, basically. And my grandfather, who was an elder in the congregation, he turned me into the police. I ended up doing 54 days in jail for that. But I got an option to, I had to do 90 days, but 54 days in, I got an option to go to a recovery program. And I went to a recovery program, which was several counties away. I ended up, this was in, and because I was over 21, this is 96-ish, and this was in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. And I ended up meeting a girl in the recovery program, and we both got out of the place at the same time. And I was fairly successful. I mean, I still dabbled in things for years, but not to an extreme like it was when I was younger. I met a girl, and then we got out of, we knew each other for being in rehab together, and 30 days later, we got married. And that, then 6 months later, we were divorced. It got annulled. Then I met another girl in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, and got married to her and ended up having two children with her during the second pregnancy. And I ain't going to go too deep into all of that because it's, I can go on forever with all the things that happened. But I was the cause of that relationship falling apart. I did some crazy stuff. I cheated on her. I mean, I ain't going to lie about it. I cheated on her. And when she was pregnant with my second son, she cheated on me. And that's when we split up and she ended up staying with this guy. My son that she was pregnant with, he grew up thinking this other guy was his dad until he was 16 years old. I mean, I really have not had much of a relationship with the oldest son. I talked to him often, but there was a period from when he was about 3 years old to about 10 years old. I didn't see him at all either. And, you know, I think a lot of it is because of what I've been through and how I've been rejected. I don't know how to love. I really don't. I still don't to this day. I don't know how to deal with relationships still to this day.
That's understandable. I'm sure that a lot of your self-esteem issues and a lot of these relationship issues also certainly were not helped by being shunned at 10 years old. That has to take a blow. It's hard enough to be between the ages of 10 and 16, alone to have everyone in your small world of your Jehovah's Witness world not even wanting to talk to you, acknowledge you, or have a conversation with you.
Tim, you were rejected your entire childhood and adolescence, and even during the molestation period. Well, that's not rejection. That's, I guess, the opposite of rejection, but it was still traumatizing for you. And you, so not trusting anybody to open up to your heart to trust and love, it's a symptom or a condition of, and again, your underlying condition of autism. Yeah, it's a perfect storm.
My whole entire life, my MO has been, when it comes to people, as soon as if there is a feeling that we're starting to get close, whether it's friends or romantic, I will do something to push it away. Whether it was, you know, and it's been like that with my children. It's been like that with everything. It's, you know, every relationship. I've struggled to have relationships with my kids. I have actually 4 kids, and I do have a relationship with my my daughter. But I mean, it's still, she's also autistic, but it's strained even with her. I mean, she's going to be 18 this year. So she's a senior in high school. She's an amazing artist. She lived with me for last summer. She has a lot of problems with her mom. Her mom's alcoholic, pretty hardcore. And she come to live with me full time for a while, but it was her senior year in school and she didn't want to change schools. So she was driving back and forth from my place to school, which was an hour drive for her. But eventually that was too much and she ended up moving back in with mom. And our relationship it was great when she was here. It was the best it's ever been. But it's like when you're out of sight, out of mind, that's where this mentality of just kind of sticks with me.
You know, in the world of relationships, I have another podcast. It's all about relationships. And I've done a lot of, not just research, but episodes on attachment theory. And you would fall under the category of a avoidant attachment.
I understand what that is.
Yeah. So you would definitely be, you're an avoidant type personality. You just don't want to get avoid relationships.
Here's the weird dynamic about that too, though. When I was in relationships, and I was in 2 long-term relationships, one that lasted 8 years. I was also codependent in those relationships, which is...
Oh, and they go hand in hand. Yeah. So Avoiding attachments doesn't mean you can't be in a relationship. It's just that the quality of the relationship is not healthy.
Not at all. Not at all. Just genuine. I can't say there was one relationship I was in where I can honestly say I think I felt love, but the rest of them, even my daughter's mom is the longest relationship. We were a little over 8 years, and I can't honestly say that I was truly in love with her the whole time.
That's understandable.
I mean, at the time, in the moment, I thought I was, but when looking back on it, in hindsight, I can't say there was any of them, but maybe one. And again, I ended up destroying all those relationships.
Yeah, that's common. It's common. And you don't have to be an ex-cult member or autistic or any other personality type. It's very common in relationships to self-sabotage, to push people away, to destroy any resemblance of a healthy relationship. I've done it. So I'm a recovering alcoholic. I live with bipolar disorder. So I can attribute some of that to my past relationship. I've been married twice. I have. I've had 20 relationships in between all those marriages, and none of them were healthy or sustainable. And I could even say, and I'm going to catch flack for this because some of my exes listen to these podcasts, I could say I've never actually loved some of my exes that when I, at the time, I said to them, I love you, you know?
Right,
but
right.
In hindsight, you say, was I really, really in love with you? Or did I just
not want to be alone?
Thank you. Bingo.
Yeah. And that's, I did the same thing you did. I jumped for the longest time, I went from relationship to relationship, jump. I mean, there wouldn't, even if I had just left a long-term relationship.
You're telling my story.
Two or three weeks, I'd be with another girl. Now, I have successfully been single for almost 6 years now.
Good for you.
And I don't desire a relationship.
Wow. I should have him on the other podcast.
Maybe you should.
Yeah. Because I have too, Tim. The last relationship I was in, it was horrible. I mean, it was great until it wasn't. And then it failed. And I got out of it and stayed out. And I've been single now going on 2.5 years on purpose to work on myself and to figure out what's wrong.
I had no idea who I was.
Right. That's exactly what I had to figure out who I was. And I found out that I was the common denominator in all the failed relationships.
Yes. And I was always who I was is who I was with. You know, I was.
Yeah. Yes.
I would, morph into what they liked and what they did. And
there's a whole theory that you fall in love with the potential version of that person, what you think that you want them to be or what they either portrayed themselves in the beginning. Oh, my God, I should have you on the other podcast.
I would love to do it.
All right. We have about 10 minutes left. Let's get to anything we missed that we really want to cover.
Yeah, actually there is. There's quite a bit. So I'm going to have to rush through it. So I get here. Let's fast forward to moving to Carolina Beach. I'm 27 when I moved to Carolina Beach. So I lived there in Carolina Beach for 20 years. I figured out I was good at sales. Every job I've ever had, I can count on these finger on both hands how many jobs I've worked for other people in my life, and every one of them I've been fired. So I figured out I had to work for myself. If I was going to survive, I had to figure out how to work for myself. Sales was my thing. I was extremely good at sales, and I was extremely creative and intelligent, and I figured out whatever I put my mind to, I could do. I ended up, the first thing I did in Carolina Beach that actually started give me some financial freedom is I created a publication. It was called The Beach Buzz. And it was just a 4-page publication. It had 30 spots of ads. It had what was going on in town, had a little headline story, had some puzzles, had horoscopes, it had the weather in it. And then it had a contest each week where you could win a gift card to a local business. I had that for about 5 years and I sold it. Then I don't even know how I managed to make this happen, but the next thing, without intention, I ended up owning a coffee shop in Carolina Beach, and I had that for 2 years, and then another coffee shop came in and ended up buying that from me. Then I developed an online business directory for the Wilmington area. Actually, that publication ended up expanding to 4 locations, and each location had the same content, but had different advertisers. So instead of 30 spots of ad, I had 120 spots for ads. So that little paper was a little gym. And I did all that in-house. I did the graphic design. I did the writing, the publication, the distribution, the printing. I bought the printing equipment to print it. Did 20,000 issues in circulation at its peak a week at all four locations. But then after the coffee shop, this is when I ended up in this relationship with this girl, this yoga teacher. And this is the one that I really kind of felt like I loved out of all the relationships. And we were kind of on and off for 5 years. I had a general knowledge of electricity. And I ended up studying and I decided to dedicate myself. I wanted to be an electrician. I like doing things with my hands. I'm an artist. I do woodwork. I do all kinds of things. But I worked for two different electrical companies doing residential wiring. The first one actually closed its doors, got me a job with the second one. And I was a foreman in both of them. Ended up being a foreman in both of them. The second one I was with for a couple years, and then I got fired. And I wanted to get my electrical license, but I was kind of scared of taking the test. I had I had enough time and I had enough experience to apply to take the test, but I never signed up for it. And then, you know, me and this girl that I was with, we lived together. I come in the house one day and she said, "Hey, you better start studying." I'm like, "Well, what are you talking about?" She scheduled me to take the test. And I failed it the first time. There's a 95% failure rate on your electrical exam and the first time you go in there. But I was able to take it a month later and I passed. And I ended up just keeping it small for a minute. It was just me and a helper or two when I needed it. And I stuck just to residential work. And 2018 rolls around and Hurricane Florence hits down here. And I don't know if you guys know about that, but it was real bad down here. I lost my house in that. There was major, major flooding. And when I say major flooding, so after the hurricane, I was fortunate enough to have another electrician loan me some tools because all my stuff was underwater. You couldn't drive to my house for 15 days. My electrical business went through the freaking roof after that. I went from just me and a helper to me. And at the peak, I had 9 guys and 4 vans on the road. But to give you an idea how bad this flood is, you know, everything's on stilts down here. There was a house that I did a rewire on that was 20 feet in the air on stilts on the Cape Fear River and still had 7 feet of water inside of it, the first floor.
Wow.
So that's to give you an idea how deep it was.
Wow.
So anyway, 2000, the end of 19, the electric business got where it was pretty much where I was just, I bought a motorhome after I lost that house, by the way. I bought a motorhome, a Class A 31-foot, bus-type motorhome. It was a bounder. And actually, I decided that turned into a full-time thing. I lived in it for 5 years and traveled quite a bit until COVID. In 2019, my electric business got where I didn't really have to be in the field. I was just doing invoicing and just kind of managing in the background. So I got a lot of free time. I built a Jeep and it was kind of fun, but from the ground up, 1979 CJ5. Towards the end of 2019, that's when my dad died. And it was an all of a sudden kind of thing. And I raced to Kentucky and I didn't get to see him before he passed. So, I didn't get to go to his funeral either. I wasn't allowed to go to either one of my parents' funerals. So we're going to skip ahead real quick. So anyway, COVID happened, the quarantine happened, and I was parked in my motorhome for that entire year. And that's when my mental health really started to deteriorate. It was after Dad died. And I had a little bit of a breakdown then. But after the quarantine lifted, I was kind of feeling a little better. I sold my electrical business in March of 2020, right before the COVID quarantine, actually. So I was sitting on a good amount of money that, matter of fact, I have not worked since then, but I'm pretty much out. I spent pretty much all my money now. In 2022, I got a phone call and mom had died. Or not died, she was diagnosed. And I didn't come from a big family. There was only me and my sister were the only children in the family. And my sister lived in Florida and she was not nearly as flexible as myself. So I was the one that went up to Kentucky. Mom was the last of the family. I was the one that went up to Kentucky. It was where I'm originally from, Louisville, Kentucky, to deal with mom's mobile home and her possessions and all that stuff. And I was totally rejected by Jehovah's Witnesses there. I was told my mom requested not to have a funeral, and then later found out that, that they call them memorials, that they did in fact have one. I ended up having to spend 5 months up there by myself in my mom's house trailer, dealing with her stuff, getting rid of selling her stuff. And mom had actually, the one thing that surprised me is when dad died, I didn't get nothing except some of his clothes and personal items, you know? And I was kind of expecting the same when mom died. But mom, she actually left, she had squandered away a good amount of money to herself over the years. She lived like she was poor, but she had $120,000 in the bank. And she left that to me and my sister. And I was really shocked about that. She left everything. She didn't leave nothing to the Jehovah's Witnesses. Everything was left to me and my sister.
Is your sister not in the Jehovah's Witnesses anymore? She's not. Either than I said? Okay.
She has her own story. Right. She went through her own ordeals and running away and all kinds of stuff. She had a little better situation with mom and dad because she was 7 years younger than me and she was the baby girl. But anyway, you know, I'm trying to rush through it. Anyway, after dad died, I ended up buying this property out here in White Lake, North Carolina. And it's pretty rural. It's about an hour away from Carolina Beach, from the coast. And it's very isolated. I don't have neighbors. I got a little over an acre out here. And I still live in an RV. I sold my motorhome, but I still live in an RV. I'm just used to small spaces. I don't need a lot. I've never needed a lot. But after I got here on the property, you know, I continued to isolate myself after the quarantine. You know, it wasn't very long then. You know, mom died in 2022. But since I got out here, I joke around. I call this my isolation station. Because I'm at the end of a dirt road, a private road. There's no neighbors. And I just began self-isolating, like, hardcore. Everything started hitting me about my past. I started thinking about, you know, what would I've done with my life if I had encouragement, I had a family, if I'd been loved, I'd been shown what love was, you know, because I'm obviously smart. You know, I've done a lot of things, and what would I have done with all that? And then, you know, I started seeing, and I just started falling into this deep mental ditch. I mean, it got bad. It got bad to the point I ended up calling a mobile crisis line.
So I have a personal question, Tim. Are you getting therapy at this point?
I am. I got full Medicaid now.
Okay.
So yeah. Yeah, so this is how it all unfolded. I ended up calling a mobile crisis line, and they come out here, and they spent a few hours with me, and they got me on Medicaid, got me therapy. The mental health system is terrible. It's nobody understands religion.
Yeah, but I did get
to take a full psychological evaluation, and this is when I discovered that I'm on the spectrum. I have let's see, I'm going to pull this up so I can tell you. I was diagnosed with CPTSD, social anxiety disorder, major depressive disorder, OCD, ADHD, and panic disorder. I actually ended up in the hospital emergency room multiple times since I've been on this property with panic attacks. And I've had a silent heart attack. And my self-isolation has actually turned into a full-blown case of agoraphobia. I also got diagnosed with that, which I don't leave the house. Still to this day, I'm dealing with that. My therapist comes to me.
Wow.
I'm dealing with exposure therapy right now. Getting back on Facebook was a big step for me because the social anxiety went as far as social media too. And it's crazy because I used to do sales, but what I realized is that was just a mask I was putting on, and it was very exhausting for me to do these things. And as I've gotten older, to be in public and to be around people, I mask automatically. It's just, I can't help myself. I just mask. The authentic me just hides, and it's exhausting to live that way. And that's where the self-isolation started happening. And I never really understood agoraphobia. I knew about it, but I never understood it until now. And it's crazy. You know, I don't leave the house unless I absolutely have to. And I haven't left the house by myself more to just go to the corner store in 2 years, probably. Usually wait to my daughter comes out here, you know, every other weekend. And I usually wait for her to get here. I can go in grocery stores as long as I have somebody with me. But by the time we're going through the line, I'm like having heavy anxiety. I'm on medication now. I've got full Medicaid. And I've got some really good esoteric beliefs. And I know what I got to do. It's just sometimes when you get into a mental funk, it's hard to get out because the negative thinking is much more powerful than the positive thinking. To me, it's harder to overcome. Here recently, I feel like that I've started to feel my spark start to come back a little bit, you know, as far as like my creative spark, which tells me that I'm making progress because I art has been my outlet is like creating things and I'm multimediums. And for a good while, I did nothing but sit on the couch every day. And I spent more time just flipping through channels or scrolling through the phone I don't even know how to describe the state. It was just like, I didn't know what to do with myself. One of my autistic traits I've discovered, and I've always done this, is I've been a pacer and I walk a lot. And one day when I was especially stressed, just on my 1 acre property, I clocked in 12 miles.
Wow.
Tim, yeah. We have to leave it there. But Melody and I have two questions we like to ask our guests upon the completion of the interview. So I'd like to ask mine and then Melody will ask hers. Is that okay?
Yeah,
sure. The first one is a little personal, and feel free to dodge the question. Where are you today with your faith?
I am I'm esoteric in my beliefs. So
okay, I know what that means because I have a whole room full of esoteric stuff. But can you explain just a little bit what that means to you and to
what that means to me is, you know, I've created my own situation that I'm in right here, and I can get out of it through conscious thought. I believe consciousness is everything. You know, okay. I believe belief is what creates your experience. You know, it's I perpetuated my experience to where I'm at right now with dealing with this agoraphobia. And I know, like, that's what I meant earlier when I said, I know what I need to do. I just need to do it. And it's a slow process. But I lean towards Gnosticism. I like those. I believe that version of the story. If you wanted to go, do you know what I'm talking about? The Gnostic text?
No.
I do not. No.
Well, it's interesting. But that's just,
that's probably a whole nother story. Maybe it's is it on your blog?
Actually, I've got some articles written, but I haven't posted them yet.
Okay. Well, we'll have a link to your blog too on the show notes, but we'll close with this question, Tim. The question that I ask is, do you have any advice for any other cult survivors or people that might be finding themselves in a situation where they think they may be in a cult?
You know, it's tough if you're in the cult in that position because you need to think. You need to critically think. You know, I can see what I could have done differently to avoid where I'm at now. I'm glad I went through the psychological evaluation, though, and learned I have autism. The agoraphobia thing, now that's a different story. The other stuff, I kind of knew, you know, the social anxiety and all that. That's just been part of all the rejection I've had in my life. You know, there's always that voice in my head that's been yelling, people don't like you, the people. But, you know, it's all state of mind. It's all state of mind. And it just really takes a shift of thought. You know, one of the spiritual teachers I really liked was a guy named Wayne Dyer. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with him, but he had this quote. You are?
I am.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Wayne Dyer. And he said, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And there's so much truth in that. That's would be my advice if you find yourself in that situation of a cult, because you need to change the way you look at things. And when you do, you can see there's something different or something going on there. I kept it buried. All this buried in me is what my biggest problem was. And it didn't come out until my parents died.
Well, Tim, we wish you all the best in your healing process and your healing journey. It sounds like you're still in that process. I'm glad you're getting the help that you need. And we want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim, thank you so much for your vulnerability, your honesty, and your story is amazing. So all the best to you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I appreciate you letting me be on here.
Our pleasure.
This is therapy for me. This is good. It's just as good for me as it is for you guys.
Good. All right, Tim, be well.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yep.
And once again, we want to thank Tim so much for coming on the show and being vulnerable and sharing his story. And it sounds like he is at this point getting the help that he needs, and he's in the process of still trying to move forward. But yeah, it sounds like he's still in that healing process, to where he's still got a lot of work ahead of him.
Yeah. And I wasn't squirming this time, but I felt very deeply an emotion for him.
Yes, empathetic.
Of course, the audience couldn't see him, but we saw him. And to have all of those diagnoses, I think that's the right word.
Yeah.
And I still don't know what CSTPDD, whatever that was. We're going to have to look that one
up. I think it's complex.
Oh, yes, there is one.
Yeah,
it's post-traumatic stress disorder.
Post-traumatic stress with complex in front of it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Yes. But and then throw in the autism and throw in the anxiety and the agoraphobia, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Yeah. He's got a full plate of. But there was a little hope at the end there, a little shine of hope that he said he's sounds like getting therapy.
He knows, yes. He's getting therapy. And he knows he's trying to change his thought patterns. He's working on it. So we wish him all the best. And and we're so appreciative of him reaching out and wanting to come on the show. We thank him for that. And we want to thank all of you as well for tuning into Cultimatum. As always, your support is greatly appreciated. And if you enjoyed today's episode, if you could just take a moment to rate and review us on platforms such as Apple and Spotify, it really does help us out. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a personal experience with cults or human trafficking that you'd like to share, reach out to us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you are an ex-cult member looking for any additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
You can also check out two of my other podcasts, the Digital Dating Podcast and the Weekend Rant Podcast, both available where you are listening to this podcast now. And if you'd like to help us support the cost of maintaining the podcast, you can show your support through the Buy Us a Cup of Coffee link in the show notes. And that's basically you just click on the link and you donate as much as you can. Or listen, at this point, we'll take scraps of food. That's a joke. But no, seriously, we could use your support. We need your reviews. We need your likes and subscribes and follows and all that stuff. Every bit helps in our mission to spread awareness about cults and human trafficking.
And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.